As most of you know, I'm an architect, and I specialise in hospital design for about 30 years now. I know I don't look old enough, but that is true. But now I actually work on the client side, so my role is making sure that the outside architects design the building properly. And I'm employed directly by a hospital. I'm often walking down the hospital corridors, and you'll see me smiling, because I know one day hospitals won't be required. People won't get sick. At the feast, we read a number of scriptures every year, and it shows us the blessing of the healing that will be abounding, such as Isaiah 35. Isaiah 35, and starting in verse 1. The wilderness and the wasteland shall be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. Verse 2, it shall be blossom abundantly and rejoice, even with joy and singing, the glory of Lebanon shall be given to it, the excellence of Carmel and Sharon. They shall see the glory of the Lord, the excellency of our God. Strengthen the weak hands and make firm the feeble knees. Say to those who are fearful hearted, be strong, do not fear. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, and with recompense of God he will come and save you. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then the lame shall leap like the deer, and the tongues of the dumb shall sing. For waters shall burst forth in the wilderness, and streams in the desert. No, it's hard to believe, but Mr. Henderson and Mr. Hancock will be having jumping competitions. For those that don't know them, yes, they have a very similar ailment at the moment. But one day, that will no longer be the thing that we will see. These healings in Isaiah are miraculous healings. The dumb singing, the deaf hearing, the lame leaping. But will this be the only way to health in the millennium? Turn, please, to Exodus 15. Exodus 15. And in verse 24, this is just after God has brought Israel out of Egypt. He's smashed the biggest superpower of the time. He's had miracle upon miracle. And not long after, the people complained against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" So he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. And when he cast it in the waters were made sweet. There he made a statute and an ordinance for them, and there he tested them. So despite their murmurings and complaining, God still provided for them. And then in verse 6, and said, "If you diligently heed my voice of the Lord your God, and do what is right in his sight, give ear to his commandments and keep his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have brought to the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you." Isaiah 53 is a case where the body is miraculously healed. But here God, the Lord who heals you, says, if you give ear to my commandments and keep all my statutes, I will put none of these diseases of the Egyptians upon you. So healing is provided in a passive way, because mankind will be keeping God's laws and statutes every day, and our bodies won't be getting sick. We know from 1 John 3, verse 4, we know it very well, whosoever committeth sin transgresseth the law, and the sin is transgression of the law. The keeping of God's laws leads to health. And in the millennium, mankind will learn how to keep the law and to reap the benefits and the blessings that God promised. Ecclesiastes 3:3, we've heard it already, mentions there is a time to heal. So the title of this split sermon is A Time for Health. Mr. Henderson Sr. brought out everything in this world is based on man's knowledge and is off target, leads to death, and that millennium will be based on God's ways, and that will lead to life. The pharmaceutical sick care machine, which is big business today, won't be in operation in the world tomorrow. True healthcare will exist, relying on God for healing. That will mean we won't need the medical industry. Some statistics for you. In 1999, there were 98,000 medical negligence deaths in America. 2009, this had risen to 200,000. And in 2016, there were 250,000 deaths caused by clinical negligence. That won't happen. Deuteronomy 6. Now this is the commandment, and these are the statutes and judgments which the Lord your God has commanded you to teach, that you may observe them in the land which you are crossing over to possess. None of the messages we've received this year at the feast have been specifically on health and healing, yet all of them actually lead to health in one way or another, because they are teaching the commandments, the statutes and the judgments, and as we've just read, they lead to healing. Today I want to look at each of the messages we've heard so far briefly and see what health benefits and attributed to keeping the statutes and the commandments identified in those messages. Mr. Nathaniel Corcutt's message had several aspects he mentioned, but I'll only be picking on one. Mr. Corcutt Jr. referenced Ephesians 5, verse 25, husbands, love your wives. So Ephesians 5, 25, husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her. What are the effects of a loving husband? Well, the effects of an abusive husband are clear. The Office of Women's Health states, violence against women can cause long-term physical and mental health problems. Violence and abuse affects not just the women involved, but also their children, families, and communities. These effects often include harm to the individual's health, long-term harm to children, and harm to communities such as lost work and homelessness. Violence against women, including sexual and physical violence, is linked to many long-term health problems. These include arthritis, asthma, chronic pain, digestive problems such as stomach ulcers, heart problems, irritable bowel syndrome, nightmares and problem sleeping, migraine headaches, sexual problems, stress, problems with the immune system. Many women also have mental health problems after violence. To cope with the effects of violence, some women start misusing alcohol and drugs. And sexual violence can also affect someone's perception of their own bodies, leading to unhealthy eating patterns and eating disorders. All of those won't occur, because in the millennium, husbands will be taught to love their wives correctly. They will marry for the right reason, not as they do now, just to do the right thing because the lady got pregnant. And they live in a marriage of consequence rather than one of love. The health effects of a loving husband and wife are clearly evident. But what are the effects of a good wife? Proverbs 12, verse 4. An excellent wife is the crown of her husband, but she who causes shame is like rottenness in his bones. In a study carried out by researchers from the University of California and published in a peer-reviewed medical journal, Osteoporosis International, the following was noted. Marriage really does make you stronger. Husbands have tougher bones than their single counterparts. The news stems from a study of 632 US men and women with an average age of 56. It examined their bone mineral density, BMD, and looked at the association between this and marital status. The BMD can be an important issue for older adults, as decreased BMD can increase the risk of developing osteoporosis. The study found that men who were currently married without a history of divorce and separation had higher BMD than men with a more checkered relationship history. This is what I found interesting. Links were only found in men. Strangely, no links between marital status and BMD were found in women who are more at risk of osteoporosis than men. It's very interesting that it is only the men this affected. But just as it says in Proverbs 12, verse 4, but she who causes shame is like rottenness to his bones. So a loving marriage does have health benefits. Harvard Health blog in their article entitled The Health Advantages of Marriage. Research suggesting that married people enjoy better health than single people, for example, as compared with those who are single. Those who are married tend to live longer, have fewer strokes and heart attacks, have lower chances of becoming depressed, and less likely to have advanced cancer at the time of diagnosis, and more likely to survive cancer for a longer period of time. And they survive major operations more often. This doesn't mean that just being married automatically provides these health benefits. People in stressful, unhappy marriages may be worse off than a single person who is surrounded by supportive and caring friends, family, and loved ones. What is interesting is that the research clearly identifies not just being married, but it is a loving marriage that makes a difference. That is something that will be throughout the millennium. All of those diseases and illnesses, just from that one happy union, will be gone. Following on from Mr. Corkart Jr., we have Mr. Corkart Sr. One of the points that Mr. Corkart Sr. mentioned was that when we are baptized, we have a family. We gain brothers and sisters, and elder brothers, and a father. The families in this world are shattered. Satan hates the family model because of its physical representation of the spiritual family that God and Christ are creating. As Mr. Phil Henderson brought out earlier in the week, the Gentile nations are better at respecting and caring for their elders than the Israelitish nations are. So what are the impacts, the health impacts, of having a family unit? A unit which cares for each other, and every member of the family doesn't just and people don't stick their parents in a nursing home or send them off to a boarding school. You look at today's family units. Children live hours, days, or even weeks away from their parents, living sometimes halfway around the world. The family unit is smashed because people no longer get married. Or marriage is so perverted that you have male and male and female and female. Even the family units, which are still traditional family units, don't function the way that God intended. What is the impact of a loving upbringing of your child? What about the health effects of sending your child to a boarding school? In a study paper for the Department of Health and Social Care at the University of Essex, which specifically looked at the impact of children under the age of 12 versus those who started over the age of 12 for boarding in. And within this paper, there were other studies which were referenced, which I found fascinating. Research on attachment theory has cited the inconsistent, unreliable, and unavailable attachment figures in a child's life can lead to a wide range of difficulties in adulthood, from mild distress to major mental health problems, including depression, personality disorders, emotional dysregulation, self-harm, cognitive disorders, narcissistic personality disorder, difficulties expressing emotions, and problems with intimacy. All of that from just sending your child away to a boarding school and not having the correct bond with your child. Let's go back to Deuteronomy 6. Deuteronomy 6. And starting in verse 1. Now this is the commandment, and these are the statutes and judgments which the Lord your God has commanded to teach you, that you may observe them in the land which you are crossing over to possess. That you may fear the Lord your God, to keep his statutes and his commandments which I command you. You and your son and your grandson, all of the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. Therefore, hear, O Israel, and be careful to observe it, that it may be well with you, and that you may multiply greatly, as the Lord God of your fathers has promised you, a land flowing with milk and honey. And dropping down to verse 7, you shall teach them diligently to your children. Not ship them off to a boarding school for somebody else to teach them. You shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk with them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. Children won't be sitting in classrooms 7 hours a day, and in a lot of cases, living in schools miles away from the family unit. Fathers will be working with their sons in whatever skill they are in. Mothers will be teaching their daughters how to be a virtuous wife, not just how to run a home, but go and read Proverbs 31 again in your own time. A virtuous wife is so much more than a glorified cook and bottle wash. She is a businesswoman whose business is caring for the family. Associated with this, add in a stable family. Continuing the study regarding the boarding schools, difficulties occurring from adolescent trauma indicates that difficulties occurred from this group into adulthood also. For example, research into insecure adolescent attachment caused by parental divorce or separation or traumatic adolescent events appears to lead to more avoidant coping mechanisms in adults, resulting in increased risk of depression, anxiety, preoccupation with and difficulties in close relationships, substance misuse, and suicide. Let's just look at what that means in today's society within the UK. Figures from the National Office of National Statistics discloses that half of all the children come from separated households. Half of all children come from separated households. And a quarter of families are headed by a single parent. However, the report commissioned by the government has disclosed that these figures may significantly underrepresent the true scale of the problem, and the latter figure could be as high as 1 in 3. The report from Rachel D'Souza, the Children's Commissioner for England, expresses concern over the effect of increasing separations and the impact of family life, stressing the importance of the family structure, which can support in times of crisis, reduce stress, improve happiness levels, and positively affect mental health. The report discloses 23% of UK families are headed by a single parent, compared with the EU average of 13. 44% of under 21s have not lived with both parents during childhood. Interestingly, 25% of parents reported an improved relationship with children during lockdown, because they were spending time with them. Having a stable and supportive family, the report carries on, can determine a child's future success. Children with happy families do better in exams, go on to get better jobs, have a higher hourly income, the age of 25. Families can insulate us from life's adversities and challenges. Families in the millennium will be the way that God intended. A loving family unit, a mother and a father as one flesh. Turn please to Matthew 19. Matthew 19. And starting in verse 3. The Pharisees also came to him, testing him and saying to him, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason?" And he answered and said to them, "Have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, 'For this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall be one flesh. So then they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no man separate.' Then they said to him, 'Why did Moses command to give a certificate of divorce to put her away?' He said to them, 'Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitted you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, this was not so. It won't be a single mum with four kids, all who have separate fathers, but a family as God intended, resulting in healthy children, both as children as they grow up and as in adults when they go on and start their own families. And there will be the extended families, all working together, grandparents, aunts and uncles, cousins, all getting to know each other, supporting each other, with the older generations guiding the younger generations. One aspect Mr. Henderson Sr. brought out was Ephesians 6, verse 1. Children, obey your parents. Ephesians 6, verse 1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you, and that you may live long on the earth. And you, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and the admonition of the Lord. In today's world, children do not honour their parents, but in the millennium they will, because of the correct bond that we've just seen between parent and child. It will be created from the moment they are born. This will result in long life. Long life is only achievable if you have good health. Currently, there is very little, if any, studies I could find relating to honouring your parents and health. But one did give some insight into it. The study was looking at adult carers who provide care for their parents. That form of full clinical care was not positive on the carer. But where emotional support was provided, the outcomes were positive. And from the report, however, some studies suggest that caregiving may be beneficial or neutral for well-being. Family scholars suggest that this discrepancy may be due to varying types of caregiving and relationship quality. For example, providing emotional support to parents can increase well-being, but providing instrumental support does not, unless the caregiver is emotionally engaged. So where a child provides emotional support to their parents, there is an increase in well-being. As Mr. Pippi mentioned, families will be taught properly. They won't be taught relationships by some faceless, perverted bureaucrat in government setting out the school curriculum to teach children. They will be taught how to love each other, how to interact with their husbands and their wives, their children, how to live with their parents, their brothers and their sisters. We will be teaching them with love and compassion, how to live in peace and in unity, and if necessary, with that rod, so that they can learn how to love each other properly, the way that God intended, not in some perverted way. Mr. Bowles, in his sermon about cities, showed us what God's design for the city is. The cities of the future aren't going to be those polluted or crammed in with house upon house. They aren't going to be going on sprawling mile after mile as a mass of housing as far as the eyes can see. They're going to be spacious. They're going to be green. The land around them, where the majority of the people will live, will be set out as God intended. On a side note, I was walking this morning back through Aberystwyth. There was a man sleeping rough on the streets in Aberystwyth. In the millennium, people's homes will always be in the family, as Mr. Bowles brought out. There will always be the support network for them. They won't have to sleep rough on the streets. Homeless people have a much higher level of health issues, and the group crisis have the following. People who have experienced homelessness are more likely to have poor physical and mental health than general population. Poor mental and physical health is both a cause and consequence of homelessness. Chronic and multiple health needs are common and often go untreated. Homeless people are also far more vulnerable to issues relating to alcohol and drug use. Multiple health needs alongside drug and alcohol use can act as a barrier to accessing mainstream health services, and as a result often end up using more costly primary health care services. 78% of homeless people report having a physical health condition, compared with 37% for the general population. Homeless people are over twice as likely to report a physical health issue than the general public. Conditions usually associated with older age are more common, showing the impact homeless has on health. Homeless people are 7 times more likely to die from falls at an average age of just 45. So just that one thing, with that family home always being there, that the person can have back. Homelessness will be a thing of the past. That entire health category will be gone. What does the World Health Organization say about cities? Urbanization is one of the leading global trends of the 21st century that has a significant impact on health. Over 55% of the world's population live in urban areas. And what does God say about that? Go out. A proportion that is expected to increase to 68% by 2050. As most future urban growth will take place in developing countries, the world today has a unique opportunity to guide urbanism and other major urban development trends in a way that protects and promotes health. This is important, not as least, because the health and well-being of citizens is perhaps a city's most important asset. However, most of the 4.2 billion people living in cities suffer inadequate housing and transport, poor sanitation and waste management, poor air quality that fails WHO guidelines, other forms of pollution such as noise, water and soil contamination, so-called urban heat islands, and a lack of space for walking, cycling and active living further combine to make cities epicenters for a non-communicable disease epidemic. In an article by Horman Law LLC entitled "Should You Live in a City or Country? How Where You Live Affects Your Health," from high costs of living and crime rates to pollution and drain on mental health, increased risks of personal injuries and incidents like auto accidents, reasons to leave the city are varied and understandable. City dwellers can experience a host of physical health effects those in the suburbs and country aren't exposed to. Living in a city has been found to increase the risk of cardiovascular and respiratory diseases. With worse air quality and higher rates of air pollution, living in a city increases the risk of a stroke, heart disease, lung cancer, and chronic acute respiratory diseases, including asthma. Research also suggests, surprisingly, that air pollution can contribute to obesity. The risk of developing depression is up to 20% higher in cities than in the surrounding areas. The risks of generalized anxiety disorder are up 21% higher in the cities. Reduced access to green and recreation areas, high cost of living and noise and air pollution can all contribute to a decreased standard in mental health in some individuals. Turn please to Isaiah 32, because let's just contrast that. That is how man does it, and they are the results of how man does it. Isaiah 32, and in verse 18, "My people will dwell in a peaceful habitation, in secure dwellings, and in quiet resting places." Mankind will be living in peace, not some madly chaotic, crime-ridden, polluting, sprawling mass where billions of people around the world are crammed in, one on top of each other. That leads on very nicely to one thing that Mr. Pippi mentioned, which was crime won't exist. It will be a peaceful habitation in secure dwellings and in quiet resting places, all of which is a total and utter opposite of what we see today. How many people think about being a victim of crime on a regular basis? Is it something restricted to just cities? Rural communities also suffer from crime. Villages and rural farms are the ideal locations for crime gangs to target because they have less security, less police presence, resulting in easier pickings. Just turn back a couple of chapters, Isaiah 30 and verse 21. Isaiah 30, 21. "Your ears shall hear a word behind you saying, 'This is the way, walk in it,' whenever you turn to the right hand or whenever you turn to the left." Now I can picture Mr. Pippi watching one of his city inhabitants in the future, who is still intent on robbing someone, as they sneak up on their victim's property. I can see Mr. Pippi just lifting them 2 foot off the ground. And he will say to them, "I've tried teaching you in a loving, compassionate way, now it's time for the rod." And he will hold them there until he's given them the right education. I mean, and the robber's going to go, "Okay, maybe I better listen up." As Phil Henderson said just now, you teach somebody in the way that they need. Some people need one method, some people need another method. But what are the health implications of crime? According to worldpopulationreview.com, gun-related deaths are tragically common. In 2019 alone, more than 250,000 people died as a result of firearms worldwide. Nearly 71% of gun deaths were homicides. What I found interesting, and as a side note, from reviewing the interactive map data, is that actually Greenland has a higher death rate per capita than the USA does. In 2019, they had 11 gun crime deaths. Which is 19.42 deaths per 100,000 population, whereas the USA had a crime death per capita of 10.89 per 100,000. They had 37,040 gun crime deaths. Statistics are amazing for being twisted. So there you go, Greenland is more dangerous to live in for gun crime. However, these are far lower than Venezuela, which actually had 10,599. That equates to 36.75 deaths per 100,000. If you take the top three countries by total deaths for the entire year of 2019, Brazil, USA, and Venezuela in that order, then the total is 114,989 gun deaths. That won't exist. What I found even more interesting in a separate report for the Lancashire County Council Constabulary entitled Health and Offending Behaviour, the effects on your health committing crime has on your body. Research by Professor Jonathan Shepherd, Director of Violence and Society Research at Cardiff University, has shown sustained criminality can impact your health. Offenders who have been entrenched in the life of crime were 4 times more likely to have been hospitalized, 13 times more likely to be registered disabled during their 40s than either those who have stopped committing crime after their teenage years or those who have never been involved in crime at all. The chronic offenders in the sample of male studies in their 20s and 30s has been significantly healthier than average, but as they aged, they experience worse health than others in the random group. That's fascinating. Committing crime will affect your health. People won't be committing crime. They won't be suffering those consequences, those curses. Mr. Armstrong, in his video the other night, talked significantly about war. To be honest, unless I do a Mr. Waterhouse, we don't have time to cover all of the health effects of war. But the Iraq War, which I believe it lasted 43 days of actual combat. From John Hopkins Medicine, an article on Gulf War Syndrome states, Gulf War Syndrome is a widely used term to refer to the unexplained illnesses occurring in veterans from the 1991 Gulf War. According to the report released by the Institute of Medicine in 2013, about 1/3 of Gulf War veterans suffer from a chronic multi-symptom illness. And a series of symptoms that cannot be medically explained. Possible causes include chemical warfare agents, possibly nerve gas, which was given as a preventative measure to soldiers likely to be exposed to chemical warfare agents. Psychological factors such as post-traumatic stress disorder. Veterans with Gulf War syndrome symptoms have higher rates of accompanying psychiatric disorders. Other chemical agents such as smoke from oil well fires, pesticides, depleted uranium, or exposures to solvents and corrosive liquids used during repair and maintenance. They shall not learn war anymore. None of those people would suffer any of those health issues. Isaiah 2 and verse 4. We know this one very well. He shall judge between the nations and rebuke many people. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. How many hundreds of millions of people have died in war since Adam? How many more have been crippled or disabled by war? How many live with long-term PTSD effects of war? How many families have had their health affected because the war man has engaged in ever since Adam took the wrong tree? Mr. Bowles, in his Restoration of All Things, mentioned farming and how to farm correctly, because that is what feeds the nations. In an interview with Robert F. Kennedy, Jr., he discussed the wheat gluten allergy. He commented that when Monsanto had DDT weed killer banned because it was harmful, they had to find quickly a replacement because DDT and weed killers were a huge money maker. They did have a product that they had previously been using to strip the inside of metal tanks. They noticed that when this product was spilled, it killed all plant life. And on that ground, voila, in 1974, they had a new weed killer, glyphosate. To start with, they could only spray glyphosate between the crops because if the glyphosate got onto the wheat, it would kill it. Around this time, there was a small increase in gluten allergies noticed. Over the time, Monsanto noticed that there was a black mold that wasn't killed by glyphosate. So, with man's reasoning, they genetically spliced the genes from the black mold into the wheat genetics. And the result was that they could now fully spray this toxic weed killer without killing it, all over the crops. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. then stated that this was when there was a huge increase in gluten allergies. Glyphosate has been linked directly to cancers, this is from a report. More than 100,000 people have filed suit against Monsanto Company, now Bayer, alleging that exposure to Roundup herbicide caused them or their loved ones to develop non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and that Monsanto covered up the risks. November 22, paper on reviewing the economic studies discusses glyphosate. Exposure to birth outcomes of populations surrounding where soy-growing regions were in Brazil. So this is not digesting, this is just living in the areas where they are spraying this on the soy. Article continues, we document a significant deterioration in birth outcomes for populations downstream from locations that have used increased relatively more use of glyphosate. Average increase in glyphosate use in the sample during the 2000 to 2010 period led to an increase of 5% in the infant mortality rate. The article goes on to list other health issues, including endocrine disruption, fertility and reproduction concerns, liver disease, kidney disease, microbiome disruption in the gut, neurotoxicity, neurological disorders, depression, anxiety-like behaviors, and anemia. Glyphosate was found in 80% of Americans' urine when it was sampled. Approximately 90% of the wheat and 94% of the soybean crop is genetically modified to allow herbicide farming, and there is only one herbicide that is used, glyphosate. Worldwide, 9.5 million tons of chemical has been sprayed onto fields. That's enough to spray nearly half a pound of Roundup on every cultivated area of land in the world. Turn, please, to Deuteronomy 28. Deuteronomy 28, starting in verse 2. And all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you because you obey the voice of the Lord your God. Blessing shall you be in the city, and blessed shall you be in the country. Blessed shall be the fruit of your body, the produce of your ground, the increase of your herds, the increase of your cattle, the offspring of your flocks. Blessed shall be your basket and your kneading bowl. Blessed shall you be when you come in, and blessed shall you be when you go out. That's how it's going to be done in the millennium. But drop down to verse 15. But it shall come to pass, if you do not obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all his commandments and his statutes, which I command you today, that all of these curses will come upon you and overtake you. Cursed shall you be in the city. Cursed shall you be in the country. Cursed shall you be, shall be your basket and your kneading bowl. Cursed shall be the fruit of your body and the produce of your land, the increase of your cattle and the offspring of your flocks. Verse 19, cursed shall you be when you come in, and cursed shall you be when you go out. That is what Mr. Armstrong banged on about with the two trees. The way of doing it right, the way of doing it wrong. As Mr. Bowles mentioned, governments seem to have forgotten that farming is to produce food for the people to consume to stay healthy. So those people who enter the millennium after going through the tribulation will have bodies which are polluted, genetically contaminated after living 6,000 years the wrong way. The pollution in the world today specifically attacks genetics of the body, affecting it at the cellular level. Numbers 14, verse 18. You don't have to turn there, but the Lord is long-suffering and abundant in mercy, forgiving iniquity and transgressions. But he by no means clears the guilty, visiting the iniquities of the fathers and the children to the third and fourth generation. So as soon as mankind starts to keep God's laws in the millennium, Mankind around the world will start to reap the blessings with increased health. But it's by the third and the fourth generations that the sins of the father, i.e. the damage caused by the chemicals in our bodies, will no longer be passed down that family genetic line. As Mr. Jonathan Gardner brought out, people will rejoice. Having a happy marriage, loving families, we've already looked at, it's a good place to start the rejoicing. Living in an environment which is spacious, everyone having their own home and associated security with never losing it. Whether you live in the countryside or the city, it will lead to health. But in the millennium, rejoicing will be across the board, primarily because man will know his creator, and because of all the physical and the spiritual blessings that man will enjoy because he is keeping God's law. In a 2017 Harvard Gazette document entitled, "Good Genes Are Nice, But Joy Is Better," the scientists began tracking the health of 268 Harvard sophomores in 1938 during the Great Depression. They hoped the longitudinal study would reveal clues to leading healthy and happy lives. They got more than they wanted. After following the surviving Crimson Men for nearly 80 years as part of the Harvard Study of Adult Development, one of the world's longest studies of adult life, researchers have collected a cornucopia of data on their physical and mental health. In addition, scientists eventually expanded their research to include men's offspring, who now number 1,300, and who themselves are in their 50s and 60s, to find out how early life experiences affect health and aging over time. Some participants went on to become successful businessmen, doctors, lawyers. Others ended up as schizophrenics or alcoholics, but not on inevitable tracks. During the intervening decades, the control group has expanded. In the 1970s, 456 Boston inner-city residents were enlisted as part of one study, and 40 of them are still alive. More than a decade ago, researchers began including the wives of the original study. Over the years, researchers have studied the participants' health trajectories and their broader lives, including their triumphs and failures in careers and marriage, and findings have produced startling lessons not only for the researchers. The surprising finding is that our relationships and how happy we are in our relationships has a powerful influence on our health, said Robert Waldinger, director of the study, a psychiatrist at Massachusetts General Hospital and a professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. Taking care of your body is important, but tending to your relationships is a form of self-care too, that I think is the revelation. Close relationships, more than money or fame, are what keep people happy throughout their lives, the study found. Those ties protect people from life's discontents, help to delay mental and physical decline, and are better predictors of long and happy lives than social class, IQ, or even genes. That finding proved true across the board amongst both the Harvard men and the inner city participants. There is nothing too hard for God to do. He is going to sort out this mess of this world, and he is going to restore it back to how it was before Adam and Eve took of the wrong tree. In doing so, man's health will be the way it was originally intended, in perfect health, because man will be living in harmony with God and his laws, commandments, and statutes. Every aspect of living God's way leads to health, and it is ways in which mankind at the moment cannot even comprehend because they have the wrong mindset. They have the way of get, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. After Christ returns, we will have the correct mindset of the tree of life. As what most of the speakers have mentioned this year, it will be us who will be teaching these principles, these laws, these statutes to mankind. This is why we are here, to learn, to understand now what we will be teaching the whole of mankind. And by teaching them, we will be instrumental in their physical, mental, and spiritual health. And on beyond, Mr. Bowles opened with on the Friday night evening service, all of this is temporary. All of the millennium, the white throne period, are temporary and have passed, and they will be replaced when every family member of God has a perfect body made of spirit. Isaiah 65, please. Isaiah 65. Starting in verse 17. For behold, I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former shall not be remembered or come to mind. But be glad and rejoice forever in what I create. For behold, I create Jerusalem as a rejoicing, and her people a joy. I will rejoice. God himself is going to rejoice in Jerusalem, and joy in my people. The voice of weeping shall no longer be heard in her, nor the voice of crying. No more weeping, no more crying. Why do people weep? Why do people cry? Because of pain, because of suffering. That is done away with. That won't be there anymore. It's hard to even comprehend a time when that pain and suffering won't exist. But not just a perfect body, spirit body. God promises here to even heal the memories of that pain and that suffering, because the former things won't be remembered anymore. God will even wipe away the very memories of pain and suffering. The children I spoke about singing that sound of freedom on the beach won't remember the vile things that they had to endure with and that they suffered. It is not going to be that we continually sin physically and our bodies get sick and we need anointing for healing. Our bodies will be getting healthier through the millennium passively, because mankind will be living correctly. They will be reaping the benefits, the blessings of keeping the commandments, the statutes, the laws, and thus avoiding the curse of having the diseases of the Egyptians put on them, as we read at the beginning. We, like God, won't want to even sin. Not just overcoming that temptation, we too will abhor sin just as God does. If physical sin is not committed, then the penalty is not required. Therefore, no sickness. Even after the White Throne Judgment, when we're all spirit beings all over the universe, even if we're in that Delta Quadrant or way beyond, it won't take us 30 years like Voyager took in Star Trek to get back to New Jerusalem. Blink of an eye, God's entire family will be celebrating the Sabbath, observing the Sabbath in New Jerusalem. That family unit is going to be there continually. We will be enjoying all each other's company and our father's and our elder brother's company, worshipping together. Those relationships which lead to health and well-being will endure for eternity. God's family will be eternally a loving family where the Father is honoured and the wife of Christ is cherished and the children are loved. All of those who become spirit beings will be living the way that God intended for all eternity. That time of sickness will be gone forever. This time, forever forwards, throughout eternity, will be a time of true ultimate health. The time of healing in Ecclesiastes 3:3 will be passed by that time. We will have those perfect bodies as our father and elder brothers have.